Your attention, please. The lid is on. Thank you and good night.
Hi, and welcome to The Lid Is On, the podcast series from UN News here in New York. I'm Jocelyn Sambira. The lid is on is the phrase we hear each night at headquarters at the close of business for the day. In this podcast series, we aim to bring to you in-depth stories beyond the daily headlines about people that we don't often hear from. This edition is about the power of bearing witness to almost unimaginable suffering and expanding the reach of international justice. This is the story of how rape became recognized as a war crime.
One of the perpetrators said, you know, we're going to leave you. We're not going to kill you. Women begged to be killed at certain points during these experiences. And they said, we're not going to kill you. We're going to leave you to die of sadness.
Never ask me again what a Tutsi woman tastes like, Jean-Paul Akayesu, a former mayor of Taba in Rwanda, said as he unleashed armed Hutu extremists against a group of women belonging to the minority ethnic group, the Tutsi. The horrific scene recounted by the women who survived the gang rape took place in April 1994 as a genocide unfolded in the tiny African nation. Nearly a million people were slaughtered, many of them hacked to death by a Hutu militia armed with guns and machetes in less than 100 days. In Taba alone, close to 2,000 Tutsis were killed between April and June while Akayesu held office as the mayor. Tutsi women in Rwanda were systematically targeted and raped during the genocide. Investigations by the UN International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, or ICTR, uncovered. 4 years later, the former mayor of Taba stood trial and was found guilty of genocide and crimes against humanity before the UN court.
La chambre d'appel siégeante en audience publique rejette à l'unanimité chacun des motifs d'appel présentés par Jean-Paul Akayesu.
The appeals chamber, in open session, unanimously dismisses each count of appeal presented by Jean-Paul Akayesu, confirms the guilt of Jean-Pierre Akayesu on the entire indictment brought against him, and confirms his sentence of life imprisonment.
The conviction set a precedent. For the first time ever in an international court, rape was considered a component of genocide. Witness JJ is one of the three prosecution witnesses for the Akayesu trial and a rape survivor. That's not her real name. All the witnesses' identities are being protected. She was repeatedly raped and beaten by the Interahamwe militia at the mayor's office where she had mistakenly sought refuge. Her year-old child was killed. Along with two other rape survivors from the same town, Witness JJ was recently featured in a documentary film, The Uncondemned, about the historic trial.
The first international criminal tribunal since World War II and Nuremberg will prosecute the individuals responsible for planning and carrying out crimes against humanity.
No one had ever been prosecuted for rape in time of war, ever.
The women decided that they were going to pray. They said, we speak only the truth, and to say what they saw and not what they heard, and that they want justice, not revenge.
It took a lot of courage for these three women, who had never set foot outside their rural town of Taba, to travel to Arusha, Tanzania, to give their side of the story. Before them, in 1997, a Hutu woman from their hometown was murdered in retaliation after testifying against the former mayor Narusha. She was killed along with her husband, four of her children, and three other children who were at her house at the time of the attack. Speaking through an interpreter at a UN special screening of the documentary, Witness JJ attempts to explain what made her risk her life.
To talk about what happened to me and to my friend, It took a very long time for me to get out of fear to start speaking out. But little by little, I was feeling this urge to speak the truth. And when it was the right time for me to open up and speak, I believe it was not just me that did this alone. They did it for all Rwandese women in general. But me, I decided to go and shame the act. I decided to go and put it out there. I decided to put it in light. And I wanted the justice, I wanted the judge, the lawyers, and everyone to know exactly the truth.
The film's director, Michelle Mitchell, was researching how and when rape was first prosecuted as a crime of war for her next project when she first heard about the Akayesu case.
I was researching the wrong case for a while because most of what I read about was what had happened at the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia. And that was a bulk of the articles and speeches and all the coverage really had mostly to do with what transpired there. So it was only when I had researched, like I said, the wrong case for about 6 months. I happened to be speaking with a human rights lawyer. She said, what are you going to do for your next film? And I said, I'm going to tell the story the first time rape was prosecuted as a crime of war. And she says, oh, Akayesu. And I was like, Aka what? And what it was extraordinary, I started researching. There wasn't a whole lot out there about it. It's very well known to law students, but certainly not to the public at large. And then I remember the first time I started speaking with the individuals who prosecuted it. And I hung up the phone and I turned to my partner, Nick Louvel, and I said, I think you're going to want to stick around for this. This looks unbelievable.
Michelle told the story through the eyes of the lawyers and activists who defied the odds and did what nobody had done before them, prosecute rape as an act of genocide before an international criminal court. Here's Michelle.
Well, this was almost 20 years after the case had happened that I stumbled on it. And so most of the research, you know, always takes place in your office through phone calls. And I've tracked down the main prosecutors. I tracked down the activists. You start to map these things together. But at the end of the day, the story doesn't work if the women who were the first in history to testify were not part of it. Then it's just another, you know, prosecutor's story. And that's not that interesting. I also wanted to know what made these women step forward and testify, because we always talk about that. We know that these atrocities occur around the world. So what is it that makes somebody who has suffered through that say, enough, I'm now going to take action? So it was very important to find them, and they weren't that difficult to find. I cashed in my frequent flyer miles. I got on a plane to Rwanda, a place I'd never been, and then I found them.
Can you give us your first impressions when you met these women and you heard their stories?
Well, I have, in the course of my career, interviewed and met with thousands of people, and the most nervous I've ever been in my life, hands down, and that includes when I've met various presidents of the United States, but the most nervous I've ever been was meeting them for the first time. And the reason for that is because I owe them so much. I mean, you know, I'm a woman, and it's just because of the luck of where I was born that I'm not vulnerable to this happening to me. And we all, as sisters around the world, owe them everything in terms of being able to right this terrible wrong. So for me, all I could think of was, I hope they like me. At some point, I almost didn't care if they agreed to be in the film or not. You know, you just want to hug them and say, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Not far from where I was standing with Michelle were witnesses JJ, OO, and NN, who are getting ready for the screening of the film at UN headquarters. Dressed in their traditional ceremonial outfit made of silk, also known as umushanana, the women were all smiles. Accompanying the trio was an older woman named Godelive Mukasarasi, a social worker who founded a group called Sevota, focused on reconciliation. The group had a brief discussion led by Godelive before bursting into song. During the genocide, Godelive made a promise to God. If her family survived, she would dedicate her life to helping women and orphans heal from the traumatic events they experienced. Her family survived in 1994, but on December 23, 1996, tragedy struck. Her husband, Emmanuel, was murdered along with their daughter and 10 other people. He was scheduled to testify before the ICTR in Arusha the following month. Pushing through the pain, Godlieve continued to offer safe spaces for women to share their stories. Her group managed to convince the authorities in Rwanda to reclassify rape from a misdemeanor on par with petty theft to one of the country's most serious crimes. Energized, Godlieve, Witness JJ, OO, and NN began making their way to a packed hall with UN senior officials, diplomats, and members of civil society. I even saw American actress and film director turned activist, Rose McGowan, sitting in the audience in the last row. Before Godlieve could take her place on the panel, I asked her what she hoped to achieve by coming to the UN.
Je sais que j'allais venir aux Nations Unies.
I was so happy when I learned I was coming to the UN because I wanted to share my hopes as well as that of the Sevota Women's Group. Women need to be compensated for the sexual crimes they suffered. I also wanted to remind people that there are children who were born of these mass rapes. The UN has adopted several resolutions on women, peace, and security in the past. 1325 and 1820 both call for the inclusion of women in peace processes. So we now need another one to deal with the issue of children born of rape committed during war or genocide. The resolution will encourage governments to provide assistance to these children and not leave this burden to the mothers alone. A study has found that these children suffer from depression, low self-esteem, and that they need protection. If these children are not helped, they might in turn become violent.
According to UN estimates, 5,000 children were born of rape in the Rwanda genocide. Joining the Rwandan women at the screening was an 18-year-old Yazidi woman from Iraq who made a dramatic and brave escape from her captors. The Yazidis are a religious minority who've lived in northern Iraq for centuries. The example set by the rape survivors of Rwanda has helped some of them bear witness after ISIL terrorists overran their homes in 2014, enslaving thousands. Layali was kidnapped along with 1,500 other young girls and spent 10 months in Mosul, which at the time was fully under ISIL or Daesh control. Here's Layali speaking through an interpreter.
During this period, we endured many violations, including rape, harassment, battery. We were asked to do services, we were cursed, and we had to endure involuntary incarceration. It is very important for justice to be carried out. Any criminal who committed crimes against me and thousands of other Yazidis should be brought to justice. I am determined to end these violations. I came here today so that the world would know what happened to us, what I had to endure. We should not hide what happened. Everyone must know the truth. The criminals must be held accountable so that innocent people like us would not have to endure the same violations. I came here to represent my family, my tribe, and all the Yazidis. I came here today to be the voice of the voiceless.
Layali made a dramatic escape by tying several scarves to bedposts and climbed out the window. She and many of the survivors want justice, says Pari Ibrahim, law student and founder of the Free Yazidi Foundation.
I'm grateful for the people of Rwanda and the people who have worked on this case, because one of the most important things for these survivors, the Yazidi survivors, women and girls, is that there is one day justice. And I'm a law student myself. And when I see this, it breaks my heart. Because why do we have to fight so long to get eventually justice? It is unfair for the survivors. that it has to take so long. And now for the Yazidi case, it's already been 2 years. Perpetrators are getting away with what they did to these young girls. The most they always ask us, is there recognition of genocide? Did people around the world give recognition to the crime that is committed to the Yazidi people?
A report by the UN Independent Commission of Inquiry has determined that ISIL has committed and continues to commit the crime of genocide against the Yazidis. Sarah Darashori, a senior counsel at Human Rights Watch in New York, is one of the lawyers who cracked the Akayesu case. The trial also broke new ground because it was the first time that genocide had ever been tried in an international court. There were moments in the trial she described as breathtaking because of the enormity of what she was trying to achieve.
So this was the first time we were prosecuting the whole crime. And also you felt this sense of history, of the need to get it right. I mean, you couldn't imagine being the people who would, you know, it was so clearly what happened in Rwanda was a genocide that if we had screwed it up, it would have been disastrous. So there was this sort of stress at the, you know, at the outtake with that and with the sex crimes that, you know, we really didn't want to leave a record that wasn't going to be withstand scrutiny and be positive.
Speaking with the survivors was devastating, Sarah recalled. The staff turnover was very high, she adds, because it was almost impossible to conceive of the things people witnessed and survived. After the genocide, gut-wrenching stories were published about the rapes. They were brutally violated with bottles and sticks thrust into their genitals, and fetuses were cut out of their wombs. For Sarah, rape is more than a sex crime.
I think that it's so clearly an act of power and violence. And it's something that, is, you know, with sex crimes in particular, I mean, that take the sex out of sex crimes. It's really purely an act of violence and terrorism intended to destroy the fabrics of the community. It's devastating to the women who, you know, as one of the perpetrators said, you know, we're going to leave you. We're not going to kill you. Women begged to be killed at certain points during these experiences. And they said, we're not going to kill you. We're going to leave you to die of sadness. And that was something that we heard a lot from survivors, how they felt dead inside and how hard it was to recover or to reintegrate into the community. And for people who have children born from rape that happened during the genocide, how difficult that is to deal with as well.
What got her through this trial, Sarah says, was the desire to do right for the people who had come forward to share their stories, and their need to see justice for these crimes. Consolé Nishimwe, author of a book called Tested to the Limit, a genocide survivor's story of pain, resilience, and hope, sent her attacker to jail. She was the same age as witness Oo during the genocide, living in Kabuye, a small town in rural Kigali, when she was also raped and tortured for months by a neighbor who also gave her HIV.
It was very hard for me to even feel like life was worth living, because I was completely broken and inside I was feeling, I don't know whether I was feeling that I'm probably not going to function like any other normal young girl anymore. So thankfully I had my mom around me who kept me, you know, encouraging me even though she was carrying the pain in her heart. To know what happened to her daughter, and just, it was very tough for her. Later on, I had the courage to get tested, like many others, and I found out I was HIV positive as a result of rape.
Sharing her story was hard at first, but it soon became cathartic. After intense counseling in New York, Consolé is now an advocate for genocide survivors and served as an interpreter for witness JJ during her address at the UN. Listening to the Yazidi girls recount their ordeal and that of women in their country brought back painful memories, says Consolé.
It really hurt me so much to see the faces and the pain these girls were carrying within themselves. And it really reminded me how I was at that time. So I didn't know that in this time I'm living that I will see anybody going through that. I thought the world has learned what we went through. And I think the fight is still going on. We still need to keep fighting, all of us, keep fighting together.
Witnesses JJ, OO, and NN, three women from a small town in the African nation of Rwanda, never dreamed they would make history and become beacons of hope for other survivors of genocide and rape in places as diverse as Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, or northern Nigeria. Their story's a testament to the power of bearing witness. Sharing their testimonies has restored their dignity. It's given them back their voice in the community, and they can hold their heads high, the women sing in this song. And as witness JJ said, there is no fear when you speak the truth. You've been listening to The Lid Is On, our podcast series from United Nations in New York. I'm Jocelyn Sambira. We'll bring you more in-depth stories in the months ahead, so please keep listening to The Lid Is on www.unmultimedia.org/radio. So, what do you think?